Hey, it's you, man, from KC95 here. Good evening and welcome to Toasted Tavern. Your host, Scott Tobin, and the man called Wags are ready to bring you the night in sports. So pull up a stool, grab a drink, and let's get toasted.
And good evening and welcome into the Toasted Tavern. I am Wags, joined alongside by Scott Tobin and Mason the Blues Fan Reacts. We've got a packed show for you tonight.
My God.
Today we thought, Thursday night football, we'll talk a little Blues hockey, and we'll be able to get through this in about an hour. No, that's not what happened today. We've got a lot of stuff to talk about, but before we get to that, gentlemen, how has your day been? I know Mason's been a long day for you, and Scott, it's been a rainy, crappy day here in St. Louis, but how have you guys been doing the last couple days?
Doing all right, man. Doing all right. Getting through it. Another week.
Yep, same here. Just chugging along, breaking my back at a warehouse in the middle of Mormonville, Utah. You know, as per usual. So we're having a blast over here in the city that sleeps too much. Well,
you sleep and then you get frozen rain. So that's generally exactly how things work down there.
It was not a fun drive.
Well, Rodney Hale, he's the one who's going to lead this off, and he is absolutely right. Mike Schilt is finally gone. I don't know if we can agree with the let's celebrate part because, Mike Schilt is a winning Cardinal manager as he leaves. But that was the big news that dropped today. It was about 1:30 this afternoon. Cardinals held a press conference and essentially let the world know that Mike Schilt, not only was he not getting an extension, he's not going to be back next year for the final year of his contract. The Cardinals have let him go. And it threw the entire St. Louis Cardinal fandom into a panic, and I don't even know where to begin because you've got pros and cons, you've got question marks all around, but what was your first reaction to the news that Mike Schilt was fired and was not coming back next year?
I was surprised, like most of Cardinal Nation, I was surprised because the rumors we'd heard earlier in the week was that they were working on an extension. You know, and we knew that he had a year left on his contract. So I thought that would play out for sure. And then we'd go from there. But apparently something's happened in the last couple of days that they were not on the same page. He was not on the same page with Mo and Mr. DeWitt. And it's going to be a new chapter in Cardinal baseball. It's going to be interesting to see what direction they go going forward. You know, I mean, as of right now, the rest of the coaching staff is still here. Do they keep them? Do they hire somebody internally? Do they go external and bring in somebody new? You know, it's really interesting. And Cardinal Nation seems to be sort of split, like you said. Some people are really kind of defending Schilt, saying, you know, the guy won. He had a really good record during the regular season, which he did. His postseason record, not so much. You know, they've struggled in the postseason the last 3 years, which, you know, is a big part of it. And then, you know, they talked about philosophical differences. And I think a lot of people that are anti-Schilt right now are kind of falling back on he fell into some of the same patterns we saw Mike Matheny fall into, where he relied on the same guys even when they struggled. You know, Matt Carpenter, he would play him no matter what. We saw him. A lot of people weren't happy with the Alex Reyes situation in the playoff game when Reyes struggled and you end up bringing him in that ninth inning. So I think a lot of people saw Schilt falling into some of those Matheny habits of not really managing the bullpen well, not managing the bench well. Those kind of things. And I think Cardinals just decided it was time to make a change. As Mo came out yesterday, which surprised me, and said, you know, he expected more from this team and was kind of disappointed in the way things went down the stretch and in the postseason. So, you know, if you're a Cardinal fan, I think you should be a little bit excited about that because basically this is a statement that, hey, yeah, we've made the playoffs, but Mo and the DeWitts are saying that's not good enough for the Cardinals and we expect to go farther than that. So I think if you're a Cardinal fan, you should be happy about that anyway.
Well, Mason, you've just now gotten into the following of the Cardinals. So you have a little bit of a different perspective on things because you're not used to – you don't know the Mike Matheny days. You don't know the Tony La Russa days or anything like that. The only thing you know is what Mike Schilt has done in the last couple of months, really. And you have the 17-game winning streak. This is something that Mike Schilt's done. He's taken teams on second half runs in his time here in St. Louis. So he has shown a propensity for being able to win and get into the playoffs. So is it more so along the lines of, hey, he's a second half manager. And if you can't have a successful first half, that it doesn't matter how good you are in the second half, because we need to have momentum to go forward sooner. I mean, it just seems like that might be a part of it as well.
I think that's kind of the bane of managers in all sports. You know, if you can't do anything in the first half, can't get the fans, can't get the players interested, go into the second half, do mediocre, go into the playoffs and just flat out do nothing. Yeah, that is a recipe for, you know, a hated manager in sports. We've seen it with the Blues. You've seen it with the Rams a lot more often than not. And now you're seeing it with the Cardinals. The only thing that I know, really, because like Wag said, I'm not very familiar with, you know, the whole happenings of the Cardinals situation. But the one thing I do know is that I don't think there's another manager in the league that a winning team hates more than the Cardinals fans hate Mike Schilt. If I'm being perfectly honest, just looking at it from an outside sort of perspective, he's a very controversial manager. Could be wrong there, obviously, but just looking at Twitter, I know Twitter, people overreact, but this is just kind of what I'm noticing here. So, but yeah, playoff success matters. And, you know, oftentimes, you know, unless you're a tanking franchise, you're not going to put a guy at the helm who's not going to, you know, demand that sort of success.
And Scott, you were talking earlier about the fact that most of this coaching staff is going to stick around, at least for right now. And I think a lot of people have been reading into that as, hey, that means somebody from on the staff is going to basically take over. But you made a really good point before we came on the show that, you know, it's, of course they're going to say that these guys are under contract. They're not going to fire everybody and then go, hey, we got to fill out a new coaching staff. So, you know, is the internal candidate option more likely, or do you really think they are going to go outside to find somebody else to take over?
I think they're going to take a little bit of time to really decide which way they want to go. You know, I know, like you said, a lot of people are like, oh, the coaching staff's all there, so it's definitely going to be somebody internal. And like you said, they're not going to fire him right away. They're going to bring in a manager, decide whether it's somebody within the organization or somebody from outside, and say, okay, what do you think of Mike Maddux? Do you want him to be your pitching coach, or do you want somebody else? You know, what do you think of the hitting coach? Do you want him? Do you want – so, I mean, they're going to leave that decision up to whoever the new manager is and let them to fill out their coaching staff, because you're not going to bring in a new manager whether – it's somebody within the organization or somebody from outside and go, okay, you're the manager, but here are your coaches. You've got to take these guys. You know, they're just not going to do that. So it's going to be interesting. You know, I think, you know, Mo said was hoping that this wouldn't drag into the middle of November, that they would have something done within a month. So it's going to be interesting. They're definitely going to take their time. You know, there's been rumblings of different people that could be on the list. You know, obviously a guy like Stubby Clapp is somebody they're definitely going to look at. You know, a lot of teams have interviewed him over the last couple of years. You know, Toronto was really interested, and he ended up not taking that job. So that's a guy, Ollie Marmol, on the coaching staff is another guy who, you know, is in a position where he may get a look. And then you're going to go outside the organization. And, you know, there's a lot of guys that have ties to the Cardinals that are in organizations that are kind of managers in waiting. A guy like Joe McEwing, who a lot of people think will be Tony La Russa's successor with the White Sox. You've got a guy like Skip Schumacher, who was kind of the next guy in line in San Diego. You know, so would Schumacher be interested in coming to St. Louis and taking that job? Terry Pendleton in Atlanta, you know, has been in Atlanta a long time, but, you know, he's got lots of ties with the Cardinals. And then there's some managers that, you know, are big-time winners that don't have jobs. There's a guy like Clint Hurdle, who did a really good job in Colorado, who did a really good job in Pittsburgh, and he's got ties to people like Nolan Arenado. And, you know, if you're interested in Trevor Story, maybe you say, hey, Clint Hurdle's coming to St. Louis. Why don't you come and play with your former manager there? And then there's rumblings about Bruce Bochy. You know, Bochy, a lot of people in St. Louis don't have the best memories of Bruce Bochy because his Giants beat the Cardinals, you know, three times in the postseason in the 2000s. But he's a winning manager. You know, he won three World Series with the Giants. He got the Padres to a World Series. He's got a lot of credential and a winning manager. That would be an interesting move. And then the one other name that is going to pop up, and he popped up the last time and a lot of people thought he might get it, is Big Mac. You know, Mark McGwire is definitely a guy who has managing ability, could be a possibility, and we know his ties to St. Louis. So that was going to be a guy that's going to be on that list as well.
But you talk about this team having gone the direction of a guy with no managerial experience in Mike Matheny. Now, you just wrapped up the tenure of a guy that had no playing experience in Major League Baseball. So are you really going to sit there and take a chance on a guy like, you know, a Skip Schumacher, a Mark McGwire, a Joe McEwing, who don't necessarily have head managerial experience? Well, obviously, you have to be a head coach to be, you know, get head coaching experience. But are they going to take that gamble on that again and run that risk? Or are they going to go with somebody that is the experienced option as well? I mean, people have thrown out Jose Oquendo. That was my dream pick when La Russa retired. But that ship has sailed completely. He does not want to be the Cardinals manager or anything like that. So just get that out of your head right now. It was something that should have happened in the past, did not happen, will not happen now. But, you know, you look at these guys and you say, okay, we've done the no experience former player route. Now do we have to go back to the experience? Let's get somebody in here that knows what they're doing. And Clint Hurdle and Bruce Bochy are both guys that when they were coaching against St. Louis, every time that you coached against them, people were like, man, they would look great as the Cardinal manager. So they have some pull here in St. Louis one way or the other. So is that the direction that they go? Is it with the experience?
You know, I mean, there's a chance. You know, like we said, Mo said he's going to take his time and look both ways. They could go either way. You know, and you talked about, you know, McEwing or a McGwire. You got to remember that both of those guys have been groomed by Tony La Russa.
Yeah.
You know, as coaches, the bench coaches, you know, so both of those guys have learned and kind of been groomed under one of the greatest managers in baseball history. So I think you'd feel pretty comfortable with one of those guys. Kind of the same thing with Skip Schumacher. I mean, Schumacher spent a lot of time here with the Cardinals, was around Tony, then went to San Diego, spent time there. You know, he worked with McGwire on that coaching staff as well. So, you know, those guys have ties, and I think you'd feel pretty comfortable there. But, you know, like you said, maybe you do make that run and say, okay, you know, we haven't won a World Series in 10 years. Let's go with a guy like Bochy or Hurdle that have been there. Because I know 10 years isn't a long time, but in Cardinal Nation, that's a long time when you haven't won a World Series.
It's a massively long time. And there was the
– so spoiled.
The rumor out there, the wish out there that people want Yadi to be a player manager as well. That's probably not going to happen. But Mason – you know, we've seen movies with this happen. We've seen some sports that have had, you know, player managers. Could you ever see in this day and age, whether it's baseball, hockey, football, anything like that, could you see the possibility of a player manager out there? And if there is that case, Yadi is the perfect guy probably, right?
Most likely. I mean, Yadi, as much as I don't know a lot about him, personality-wise, just how he carries himself in interviews, how he's constantly talking to the other players in the bullpen, out on the field, always taking those breaks. I don't know if that's a normal thing, go collecting to, you know, the pitcher for a few seconds, you know, in between, it seems like, you know, every out. But, you know, just the way that he seems to carry himself, he reminds me a lot of Jaromir Jagr. And everybody here knows about Jaromir Jagr. He's the only reason why there's a, you know, hockey club in the middle of the Czech Republic. And it's pretty much the only reason that that hockey club is afloat, because he's part owner, part player. So, I mean, if I really think about it, maybe in a professional league like that, it sounds weird, because it probably is weird. I mean, you know, if you think about it, what Jagr's obviously doing right now is he's doing it because he just wants to play. I think Yadi would come in with a mindset of wanting to win, and I don't know how mentally taxing that would be, especially in, you know, just how complicated MLB baseball has turned in the last decade or so.
And being a catcher, that's tough too. Scott?
Yeah, I don't think Yadi would want to do it. First of all, Yadi doesn't love talking to the media, and that would be a huge part of his job. That's a reason why one guy that people have talked about, Willie McGee, being a possible candidate, but Willie wouldn't want to do it because Willie hates that part of baseball. You know, he's just not good at talking to the media. Yadi doesn't like to do it because his English is kind of broken. He doesn't speak the best English. So I don't see him wanting to do that in that situation. Plus, I don't think, as close as he is to those guys, I don't think he would want to try to manage and play with them. I think it would just be too complicated. I mean, we haven't seen that happen in baseball since Pete Rose with the Reds in the 80s, and we know how that worked out. So,
yeah, not so good. And gambling's a little bit more prevalent nowadays as well. So there was another name that kind of has been thrown out there, and it's actually someone we've had on this show before. And I don't know if it's even something that he would be willing to even entertain. But could you see a guy like a Matt Holliday being intrigued, or at least the possibility of him being a manager at some point? Or do you think he would want to maybe just be one of the guys on the bench being a manager there as well? I mean, do you see Matt Holliday being somebody that could be an option?
I don't think as a manager right now, because he's never managed anywhere. You know, he's never really coached anywhere. I mean, he's done some college stuff with his brother and that kind of stuff, but professionally he's not. And so I don't think so. You know, plus, you know, he's kind of in Oklahoma with his kids right now as they're all in high school playing ball. So I'm not sure that that's something that he would want to commit to right now with his kids being at that age. But I mean, potentially as part of the coaching staff at some point. Yeah, I definitely think he would probably be a good hitting coach at some point.
I think he would be as well. I mean, him or a guy like Jim Edmonds, they're both guys that could potentially be hitting coaches. I'd love to see McGuire come back for sure. I mean, he had success here as the hitting coach with the Cardinals. I don't know if he really wants to be the head coach. I mean, at least maybe not right this second, but I just don't see him wanting that spotlight just yet. But there's a lot of options. And like you said, They don't want this stretching into the middle of November, which really made me sit there and think back and go, okay, they said this thing just kind of popped up really, really quickly. But you don't make this move unless you have somebody potentially in mind to take over. So, yes, it popped up unexpectedly, I guess, but they had to have been at least exploring options outside. If maybe Schilt didn't sign an extension or didn't want to sign an extension, maybe for next season, is that something that was going through your mind, that maybe they do have somebody that they're interested in?
Oh, I'm sure they probably do. You know, that's something they're probably working on all the time is, okay, if this doesn't work out, where do we go next? So I'm sure they do have some kind of a list and have some thoughts of, you know, whether they've actually talked to somebody already or not, who knows? You know, I saw something which, personally, I would hate this, but somebody said, you know, there's a manager in Anaheim that is a player's manager, and he wasn't really happy out there. Maybe he resigns and the Cardinals offer. I do not want to see Joe Maddon in a Cardinal dugout ever under any circumstances.
Yeah, I know. Somebody posted a picture today on social media, and they're like, yeah, Joe Maddon just flew into St. Louis, and looks like he might be heading over there to talk to Mr. Mosaic. No, that was not what happened. Buy an old picture of some sort. But no, Joe Maddon is not in St. Louis to interview for the Cardinals job. That's not going to happen. I know that a lot of people wanted him when he left Tampa Bay. I think it was down to St. Louis or Chicago in that instance, and he ended up going to Chicago. Obviously had some success there, but we won't talk about that. So I think he's done and past his prime and past the want to have him here in St. Louis. But you know, you go back to Bruce Bochy, like you said, and a guy that's multiple World Series championships. He's a winning coach. And we were talking about it before we came on, and you know, the Cardinals, it felt like, and I know you listened to the interview or to the press conference with Mosaylock today, but you know, it sounded like they were trying to move this team more to the analytical side. Obviously, we've seen that with launch angle and exit velocity and all that kind of stuff the last couple of years. And maybe this was, you know, Mike Schilt going, look, I don't want to do that. I mean, obviously, he's one of the only guys that has a notebook of George Kissel's thoughts and plans for baseball, and that's a pretty damn good guy to have notes from. But if they do go out and approach a guy like a Bruce Bochy, do you feel like the organization is willing to step back from that analytical viewpoint and say, look, we know it's the wave of the future, but we need a guy that'll come in here and maybe win us a championship and maybe fuse the two together? I don't know if Bochy can do that, but maybe he can, and maybe that's the way the organization wants to go. I mean, is that something that you feel like they would take that step back to maybe take a step forward with a younger manager for the next time around?
Yeah, I mean, I think you have to. Well, and if you look at what they did during that 17-game win streak, they did go away from analytics because they did the things that analytics say don't matter. They stole bases. They bunted. They moved runners over. They did all the things that analytics say don't really count, or, you know, an outs and out and all those things that they did just the exact opposite of that, which is what spurred the 17-game winning streak. So when you look at it that way, I think they did go the opposite way of analytics is what got them into the postseason. Because
did that cost Schilt his job then?
No, I don't think so. Because, again, you know, exactly what, you know, we're never going to know exactly what they disagreed on. I don't think it was that, because I think you have to look at that and say, you know, that's what made us win. You know, I think it, you know, and Mo said it wasn't about wins and losses. It was something else. So, you know, who knows exactly what it came down to? It could be something really weird that we'll never know. But I think they are willing to kind of merge the two. And Mo's kind of talked about that, you know, the second half of the season, that they couldn't just go one way or the other. So I think that's definitely something that they're going to look into as they move forward.
But you say that, and how many times have we said on this show that John Mozeliak is a guy that doesn't like to look bad? He doesn't like to look like he didn't make the right decision or something of that nature. Well,
okay, what player, what person does though?
Well, not so much in such a, just a basic way, but in his mindset, every move that he makes is going to work. It's more along the lines of, and we've talked about this, where it's like, hey, I brought this guy in. We're going to play him so that my mistake is not a mistake in a sense. He never answers for his mistakes in a sense. You know, the Matt Carpenter extension was something that didn't need to be handed out. It was handed out, and then they kept running him out there. So he basically looked terrible at the end of his time here in St. Louis, but it was because Mo didn't want to admit his mistake. So, you know, in this instance, I don't think that's the case, but Mo's not going to go out there and admit that, you know, hey, I told them to go analytical the whole time and went against everything that we've said to do. They've won game. They won 17 in a row playing baseball the way it should be played, but because he didn't follow my direct assertion that you have to be analytical, well, you know, we're going to let him go. I mean, I don't know if that's actually the case, because like you said, we don't know and we will never know what exactly the differences were. But everything that we've talked about on this show has kind of made me sit there and go, yeah, maybe Mozeliak, maybe Schilt went against the company line. And Mo's like, hey, if you don't want to follow it next year, you don't have to be here.
Well, and we don't know. While we know that there was a difference in opinion, we don't know if it was a difference in opinion between Schilt and Mo, or if this is Mr. DeWitt going, hey, guess what? My organization's not winning, and so we're going to do things differently, because we know that DeWitts want to win. Although, oh, yeah. Even though fans don't always want to agree with that or buy into that, this ownership group wants to win, and they know it's been 10 years since they won a World Series. He knows he's not getting any younger, you know? I'm sure he would like to have another one before he hangs it up or passes away, because Mr. DeWitt's not a young man at this point. So, you know, it could be a decree coming from him that, hey, you know what? Your postseason record wasn't good enough. You made too many mistakes in your bullpen management and this management, the way you handled your bench, and we're going to change things. And if you don't like that, then Mo, get rid of it. And it could have come from the top for all we know.
Well, and it also makes me sit there and think maybe Mike Shannon wasn't too far off base, that maybe the DeWitts are looking to sell. I don't know. That's a story for another day. We've got plenty of stuff to talk about with the Cardinals over the next couple of weeks. But with this coaching change, obviously that's going to somewhat affect what they're going to do in the offseason as far as free agency and things along of that nature. And you know, you came across a story yesterday, Scott, about potentially a Trevor Story acquisition for a decently good price and term as well. What do we think about that? Does this move help or hurt those chances? I mean, it obviously depends on who's brought in, but you know, where do we sit on the Trevor Story situation?
Yeah, that was a report. Dan McLaughlin had one of the Colorado Rocky analysts on. And he was talking about the Cardinals' links to Trevor Story and the fact that he thought Story was going to be the Cardinals' top priority this offseason. You know, and he kind of said that he thought that Story was going to take a smaller deal, you know, a couple of years to try to kind of rebuild, because he had a rough year this year, and that he knew that Story would like to play with Nolan Arenado, that he liked St. Louis like Arenado did. So he kind of thought that that Story may sign a deal with the Cardinals somewhere in that three-year, $18, $19 million a year deal. If you can get Trevor Story for 3 years at $18 million, I mean, that's 3 years, $54 million. If you can get Story for that, that's a heck of a deal, because then you still can go out and get at least a mid-tier starting pitcher or a high-end relief pitcher to add to this team. I mean, that would be huge if they could make that work.
Oh, absolutely. And that means obviously you're moving on from Paul DeJong, giving Edmundo Sosa a chance to kind of sprinkle himself in there and either prove that he can be a guy that eventually takes over or at least be a good bench bat as well. So lots of options there, and the rumor mills will continue to churn as we go along here over the next couple of months as we get closer and closer to spring training. I know the playoffs are just now kind of underway, so spring training is way, way down the road. And before I move on to another sport, I got to ask you real quick, Scott, about the Dodgers' decision to not start Urias tonight and go with an essential opener in their winner-take-all game against the Giants tonight. What are your thoughts on Knebel starting?
I was surprised by that. I was definitely surprised by that. Dave Roberts kind of rolling the dice here, but it's a nothing-nothing game right now. So it's worked out to this point. This has been a heck of a series. You know, it's come down to the Giants pitching, because the two games the Giants have won, they've shut the Dodgers out. You know, the two games the Dodgers have won have been blowouts. So, you know, the way this game is going, it looks like it's in the Giants' favor. And as I look, the Giants have runners on first and third right now with one out. So it would be a surprise. I think a lot of people would be shocked if the Giants upset the Dodgers. I mean, even though the Giants had the best record by a game, I think everybody thought the Dodgers, or at least, you know, most baseball insiders, because they're the Dodgers and that payroll and the talent they have, thought the Dodgers would win this pretty easily. And as we're talking, the Giants hit into a double play and the Dodgers got out of it. But so it's still nothing-nothing as we move to the sixth inning. So good ball game.
Very good ball game. And as we switch over from baseball to another sport, I just want to leave you with these words from friend of the show, Tom Ackerman, about Mike Schilt. He goes, "Mike Schilt is a good man. Cardinals are a great franchise. Baseball is a tough, competitive business. All of these things can be true. Best to you, Mike. Thanks for all the good times." That was from Tom Ackerman over on Twitter tonight. So, you know, I think we can all sit back and really, that's what we should be thinking. You know, hey, regardless of what the differences were or how things went down, Mike Schilt can be a good man. The Cardinals can be a great franchise. It's not mutually exclusive. You wish both sides nothing but the best. Thanks for the memories. Wish you could have won a championship, but we didn't, and we move on. So with that, we're going to move on because, like I said, we still got a ton more stuff to talk about. The NHL Open play on Tuesday night, and the Blues have not played yet. What? That they haven't played
at
yet.
NHL.
Not playing till Saturday. They open up in Colorado against the Avalanche. A good test to start the season for the Blues. Gabriel Landeskog will not be playing for the Avalanche in that game. He was suspended for two games after a brutal hit on Kirby Dach of the Chicago Blackhawks.
Gutless.
And that's a good thing for the Blues for sure. But you know what? Well, let's start off right there with the Blues. And you know, especially with you, Mason, what are your expectations for this team this year? We'll get to the predictions of where people are going to end up, where teams are going to end up here in a little bit. But just in general, what do you look at the Blues and go, okay, this is how I see them this year?
You know what? My expectations has upgraded a little bit, you know, since the start of training camp and, you know, the preseason, especially after the prospect tournament. You know, for the entire offseason, I've been saying both on this show, on my channel, everywhere, I've been saying this team is a first-round exit. No question about it. But I think I'd like to upgrade that. I like to rescind that. I like to upgrade it. They're a second-round exit this
Ooh.
Year. That I'd like to upgrade. Yes, upgrades, people. But I look at this team and I go, okay, is this team, how their ice right now, are they better than Colorado? No. Okay. Are they better than Winnipeg? No, I don't think so. Not yet, but maybe. Are they better than Minnesota? They're about even with Minnesota, I'd say. They don't exactly have that star power, you know, that Minnesota has with Kirill Kaprizov basically carrying that franchise right now. But, you know, there are more.
That's the operative word there, carrying a franchise. One player carrying a franchise. But continue.
Yes, but he carries that franchise so freaking well that it's still better than the Blues, who can kind of roll four lines here, which should just prove to you how great Kirill Kaprizov is. You know, that's a testament to him. But I look at the other guys. Are we better than Dallas? Yeah. Are we better than Nashville? Oh, yeah. Are we better than Chicago? Hell yeah, we're better than Chicago. Then Arizona, you know. I mean, my Pee-wee team was better than Arizona right now. So there's I look at it based on that, and that's kind of where I rank standings. I don't look at, you know, okay, who's on the schedule at the end of the season, who has the schedule at the beginning. I just look straight up. Who's the best team? Who's the worst team, right? And then just kind of sort out where the Blues are from there. But the way that this Blues team is built, even though they will be fourth in the division, and there's no way that, you know, there's no way that the wild card race isn't, you know, two Pacific teams. I mean, that's not happening. So the fourth place in the Central is making the playoffs, and that's where I have St. Louis. But I look at it and I'm like, you know, the way that this team is built, I think they could pull off a first round upset, you know, based on, you know, whoever they're playing. And I have them, but, well, we'll get to it later on. But the team that I have them put it up against, if that were the case, they can beat. They've beat them before.
And Scott, what about you? What's your mindset on this Blues team? I know you've never been super confident in guys like, you know, Jordan Binnington and things like that. But where do you see them at this right now?
And I said it the other night, and I'm still going to say it. I still have a ton of questions. I don't really know what to expect from this team yet because, you know, the big question I have is what happens with Vladdy? Until you either know, yeah, he's here, or you trade him, or you see what happens there, I think there's going to be a question mark hanging over this team. How do they play? How do the new guys fit in? You know, you've got a lot of new guys on this team. How quickly do they mesh? You know, does Jordan Binnington bounce back and play like he did, you know, a couple of years ago when they won a cup? Or is he the guy that we've seen the last year and a half that's just kind of inconsistent? You know, I mean, can the defense step up? There's just so many questions, man, that I really don't have a good answer for what I expect this team to be. I'm just going to kind of sit back and watch for a while and see what happens, basically.
So I'm gonna just throw this out there because everything you just said spurred in my mind a very recent team that this Blues franchise had. So you're saying they have a lot of new players. You're saying they have a goaltender who may or may not be consistent or not. You didn't mention that there's a young rookie on this team that people weren't sure if he was going to make it or not. And they're in a division that people feel like they're going to be kind of middle of the road at. I'm trying to think. There's a team recently that had a lot of new players, had a rookie that they weren't sure was going to make it, had a goalie that people had questions about in a division. That was 2019. Pretty sure that this is the exact same scenario that we had in 2019, a team that was trying to come together with new players, a little bit of a regime change, a rookie in Robert Thomas, Jake Allen was in net, you weren't sure. And now you look at this team and you go, okay, new guys coming in, check. Rookie who made the team that was a little unexpected. Oh, check. Jake Neighbors.
Oh, yeah.
Was on this show before. Hey, goaltender that people have questions about. Oh, Jordan Binnington. Check. Well, guess what? Down in the minors, the Blues have a couple of goaltenders that might be able to pull the Jordan Binnington card. Maybe not as a crazy story as him being loaned out to another team, but you got guys in Joel Hofer and Colton Ellis that are down there that are chomping at the bit to get up here. So you have a potential superstar moment for one of those kind of guys. And then they're in a division that has a powerhouse in Colorado. Well, back in 2019, I'm pretty sure a team like Dallas was considered a powerhouse. Chicago was kind of still a bit of a powerhouse. So there's a lot of pieces that go in. And obviously, you can't look at it and say every season's going to match another season. We thought this year's Cardinals was going to go on a 2011 run. So you can't necessarily predict these kind of things, but we've seen this kind of story before. And I don't think the Blues are going to start off as terrible as they did in 2018-19, but you have to look at those variables and go, okay, they've been through this before. That means Craig Berube is going to get fired about halfway through the season. So let's not maybe put a couple bucks on that just in case. But this team I think they're a lot more than the sum of their parts. I think they are going to be a pretty good team this year. I think you're going to get a pissed off Vladimir Tarasenko. He's going to go out there and try and up his trade value. And yeah, it's a bit of a distraction to have a guy that may or may not be on this team going forward, but he seems dedicated. He seems committed to making this team well. And I'm fine with that. I mean, yes, you have to go into the mindset thinking, okay, he is going to be gone at some point this year. And if he ends up sticking around the whole year, that's just icing on the cake. He's going to work hard to try and up that trade value. So I count Tarasenko as actually just as a boon, honestly, for however long we have him. And you look at guys like Brandon Saad. There's a guy that we have on this team that he was talked about a ton when we brought him in. No one said a word about him in the last couple of weeks. Let's talk about Pavel Buchnevich. I mean, this is a guy that could go out there and be the leading scorer on this team. So there are a lot of pieces go together. And I like Scott's point, though. There's a lot of guys on this team that are new. It's going to take some time to gel and get things rolling. So be patient with this team because it may not start off great, but you could see a bit of a run like you did in 2019.
Well, and exactly. How quickly, if Buchnevich and Saad don't get off to quick starts, how many Blues fans are going to be like, oh, horrible moves. We need to trade them. This team sucks. Army doesn't know what he's doing.
Every year. It's like clockwork.
It's going to happen anyway.
Oh, yeah.
It's like clockwork. This happens constantly. We saw it with Falk right after the cup run. We saw it with Krug last year.
Yeah, so, you know, people just, like you said, and like I said, people just need to kind of wait and see what happens because it probably is going to take a while. They're probably not going to immediately gel and be amazing the first 15, 20 games of the season.
And watch, they'll go out there and win their first 19 and we'll be like, hey, we were wrong.
And I'll be fine with that.
Totally. And then lose for the rest of the season. Every single game, go 0-68.
That'd be terrible. That'd be terrible. All right, well, let's get to some of our picks for this year. We're going to start off with Tom Franklin's. He's a little under weather tonight, and we're making some changes, but you guys will hear about that here in the next couple of days as well. But let's get to Tom's picks real quick. I know you still kind of see us. Hi, Mom. Tom, in the Central, has Colorado, Minnesota, St. Louis, Winnipeg, Dallas, all those teams making the playoffs, and then Nashville, Chicago, Arizona rounding out the Central. Vegas, Edmonton, Calgary, all playoff teams. Seattle, the Kings, Vancouver, Anaheim, San Jose out in the Pacific. In the Atlantic, Tampa Bay, Toronto, Boston making the playoffs, Montreal, Florida, Ottawa, Detroit, Buffalo out. And in the Metropolitan, the Islanders, Penguins, Hurricanes, Rangers, and Capitals making the playoffs with the Devils, Flyers, and Blue Jackets out. Got Colorado beating the Islanders in the Stanley Cup, with Colorado being the President's Trophy winner, which would make them the first President's Trophy winning team to win the Stanley Cup since who, Mason?
I wonder who. St. Louis Blues.
No, it was like Tampa, I believe. the Blues never won the President's Trophy.
Beating New York. I misunderstood the question. Yes.
It's okay. All right, that's okay. So those are Tom Franklin's picks. Not bad. I mean, I think they're pretty safe and pretty spot on. I mean, you took some of these teams that made the playoff. Well, a lot of the teams that made the playoffs last year and put them right back in there. And then a lot of those teams didn't change. So it's a pretty safe set of picks there. And now let's get to Blues Fan Reacts picks, because I saw these and I was like, interesting.
Both of you guys did a double take. I know it. I didn't see it physically, but I know the moment I put that in the chat, I knew that you both did a double take. Like, what?
You could feel it.
I asked my friend, like, right afterwards, I Snapchatted my friend, and I'm like, is this, like, totally insane? And he's like, yeah, but I love it. So there.
It works.
Typical NHL. Typical.
It works. You've got Winnipeg at the top of the Central with Colorado, Minnesota, and the Blues all making the playoffs. Dallas, Chicago, Nashville, Arizona out. In the Pacific, you've got the Knights, Oilers, Kraken, and Flames making the playoffs. Kings, Vancouver, San Jose, and Anaheim out. Over in the Atlantic, Toronto, Florida, Tampa, with Boston, Montreal, Ottawa, Detroit, Buffalo rounding out the missed playoffs in there. And then you got Carolina, Pittsburgh, New York, and Washington making the playoffs in the Metro, with Florida beating Winnipeg in the Stanley Cup Finals. Basically, you're saying NHL, you got a brand new set of networks to promote all this stuff. We're going to go to the two weakest markets ever for the Stanley Cup Final.
Oh, yeah, totally. Wouldn't just be the most NHL way to introduce it? Wouldn't it? Yes. Like, come on.
It kind of would.
We all know how pissed everybody was when St. Louis won the Cup, so they had to gift wrap Tampa Bay two of them, right? Just to kind of make up for that lost ad revenue there. But
oh, man.
Well,
It's ballsy picks. I'll be perfectly honest. Ballsy. Those are ballsy picks. So.
They're ballsy. I realize that. But my main reasoning, and because I wasn't actually planning on being on the episode today, but that's just how the cookie crumbles, I suppose. My reasoning, honestly, for having Winnipeg above Colorado comes down to two words. Darcy Kuemper. Can he really be the guy for Colorado who can carry them for a deep playoff run? I don't think so. Not when, you know, the playoffs are running on just dirty chip-in goals. So that's really what it comes down. I don't really have the Colorado Avalanche on a deep playoff run. In fact, as you can see, you know, I have them bowing out in the second round there because they're in the second. Minnesota's not beating Colorado. I don't think so. But like I said, you know, earlier, I have St. Louis beating Winnipeg because we've done it before and we won a freaking cup doing it. So, and I can argue that Winnipeg team might be more susceptible to, you know, a more balanced Blues team, you know, more than, you know, 2019.
I can 100% agree with you on that one. All right, Scott, give us your Central Division picks. I know we kind of threw that at you last minute.
I went Colorado, Winnipeg, Minnesota, the Blues, Dallas, Nashville, Chicago, Arizona.
Okay. So we're starting to see a bit of consensus that Nashville, Arizona, and Chicago are teams that are going to be out of the playoffs.
I mean, did you see Arizona's game? It was 8-2 Columbus. Columbus beat Arizona 8-2 today.
I know. That's what
and
you
then
get
Ottawa
you
beat Toronto, but that's just like contracts. A daily occurrence, it seems. So,
It is. And then, Scott, do you have a Stanley Cup pick?
I haven't gone that far yet. I haven't. I'll be honest.
It took me a little while to get to mine. I was throwing darts at a board essentially when it came down to my picks. And you know, you thought Blues Fan Reacts picks were out there.
Those ones were the ones I thought.
Mine are out there too. So for the Central, I've got Colorado up at the top, Minnesota. I've got the Blackhawks at three.
I just don't understand that.
Hey, it's the magic of MAF, man. It's Marc-Andre Fleury. And the fact that now that they've got a goaltender, oh, guess what? Patrick Kane and Jonathan Toews are healthy. And they've got Alex DeBrincat and guys like Kirby Dodge back there. I mean, this is a team that could be sneaky good. And that should be something that scares Blues fans because Chicago is poised to go on a very deep bow out. And they've rebounded after a couple of years and gotten out of from under some bad contracts as well. So I'm going to ride the Chicago bus and maybe get surprised by it. But I do have the Blues in fourth, Dallas, Winnipeg, Arizona, Nashville, rounding out the teams that are out of the playoffs. I'm not sold on Winnipeg. I just really am not. They've got kind of Connor Hellebuyck back there in net, and he's definitely put together a couple of really, really good seasons, but that no-name defensive core was, while good last year, it still scares the hell out of me. And I mean, you look at their offense and it does kind of match the Blues in a sense where they've got a lot of grinders and a lot of lines that can be good, but we've seen here in St. Louis how that can work, but it can also epically fail. And I just don't feel like Winnipeg is up to the challenge this year. So I've got them out of the playoffs. In the Pacific, we've got the Golden Knights, the Edmonton Oilers. I've got the Kings up there as well with Calgary coming in fourth. I think that the Kings are another team like Chicago that are going to be overlooked a little bit, and they may sneak up and surprise some people. And then Anaheim, Seattle, Vancouver, San Jose out. In the Atlantic, I've got Toronto, Tampa Bay, Florida, Montreal making the playoffs. And yes, I've got Boston just out of the mix with Ottawa, Detroit, and Buffalo there as well. And then in the Metro, I've got the Islanders, Carolina, Washington, and Pittsburgh, Philadelphia, the Rangers, Blue Jackets, and Devils out. And for my Stanley Cup pick, I've got the Carolina Hurricanes beating the Vegas Golden Knights in the Stanley Cup Finals. I mean, I think it's I like to think it's a trendy pick, but I think a lot of people are actually picking the Hurricanes to be a very, very good team this year. They're a bunch of idiots like they were a couple of years ago. They've got some good goaltending. They've got a lot of talent up front, and they have a pretty solid defensive core as well. So that could be a really fun series. I know, just like the Florida-Winnipeg series for you, the NHL doesn't want Carolina in it because the ratings are going to be terrible. But you get Vegas in it, and people are going to watch. It's gonna be a really, really fun season this year because there are a lot of teams that can really, really do a lot of fun things, and it's a crapshoot. You just really don't know who's gonna make it this year.
Yeah, and if I look at, you know, all the teams that, especially where I put them, like just writing them down and seeing, it's one thing to like think, okay, this team's going to go where, but it's another thing just kind of seeing the big picture of what you've actually written down. And I just look at them and I go, there are a lot more dark horse Stanley Cup candidates this year than I've seen in probably 6 or 7 years now. I mean, there are so many teams that can just absolutely go for a run. As for like, you know, award predictions, we look at those and we all had the consensus on, I think we had the consensus on the Calder for Caulfield because it is Cole Caulfield.
Yeah. And then, who else is out there?
Right. Exactly. And then, who's the other guy? The Norris, we all had Cale Makar, which obviously, I mean, it's Cale Makar once again. But something that's really interesting is that you two had for the Vezina, you had Vasilevsky, and then here's my rebellious ass picking Sergei Bobrovsky, which is probably the take that's going to get me canceled off of YouTube, like if I'm being perfectly honest.
I mean, if Florida's going to win the Stanley Cup, they're going to need Bobrovsky to step up. I mean, it's not going to be Spencer Knight this year. I mean, he's a good goaltender, but it's going to have to be Bobrovsky, and if you got them winning the Cup, it's going to have to be on his shoulders.
Absolutely. And then the other one, let's see, we're looking at the Ted Lindsay Award. I think all of us had different ones. Yeah, I had McDavid. You're looking at McKinnon, Tom's looking at McKinnon. You're looking at Matthews. I have Matthews for the heart, if that makes any difference. But yeah, Conn Smythe Trophy, you know, votes obviously like way out of the park, of course. And the other thing that's really funny is that, you know, we all had different cup champions and different, you know, finals candidates. But what I really, really like is that, you know, let's see, you had Vegas who went in the presidents and they're in the finals. Tom had Colorado and he had Colorado win in the finals. And then I just go, Vegas is going to win it, but then they're going to be absolutely disappointed by please let it be Montreal. Like if anybody is going to end their career, please let it be Montreal, end their President's Trophy dreams. And I wanted to put Florida, or excuse me, I wanted to put Winnipeg as the President's Trophy winner, but I'm like, no, there's a curse attached to that. That's probably not happening if we're being totally realistic here.
I mean, yeah, how many times has the President's Trophy winning team won a Stanley Cup? It's not very often. Right. They tend to get knocked out early on. So, yeah, you almost don't want to win the President's Trophy, but it's still a great accomplishment.
You do, but you don't.
Yeah, I mean, you do, but you don't. Like I said, it's going to be a real interesting year. And we were talking about, you know, the Conn Smythe winners. And I know Scott and I have talked about this a lot. And I tell this to everybody that I talk to when it comes to the playoffs. But you can't look at the big time names and be like, oh yeah, that's going to be the Conn Smythe. It's not going to be a McKinnon. It's not going to be a McDavid. It's not going to be a Matthews. It's always going to be, it's going to be one of those underrated scrappy guys that kind of jump off the radar that essentially is going to be the guy that has the most to gain essentially in the playoffs. I mean, look here in St. Louis, David Eckstein was the World Series MVP. Okay. That was a team that had Albert Pujols and Jim Edmonds and just a bunch of guys that had the ability to be the MVP. And it was David Eckstein that won the MVP that year. So those guys that are the unsung heroes, they're the ones that win things in the playoffs because top lines match up against top lines. It's the guys on the third and fourth line that are really going to be the ones that make a difference.
Right. Well, that's why I really like your Aho pick. If I'm being perfect, like I think, yeah, he's the perfect candidate to win a Conn Smythe. He could absolutely, you know, really control a blue line and, you know, really carry it for the defense there. But whenever I think of that, I think of the Seahawks of when they beat the Broncos and Malcolm Smith got the freaking Super Bowl MVP, right? Went on a team with Russell Wilson, with Percy Harvin, you know, with all these big, you know, Bobby Wagner, you know, all these big guys that were absolutely carrying this team into the finals. But it was Malcolm Smith. Hockey has infested my brain. Malcolm Smith is the guy who ends up taking the MVP, which, I mean, that's a very split issue between Seahawks fans. Luckily, I'm not one of those anymore, so.
Yeah, we've won you over to the, it's the,
you're a Cardinal I'm still fan a free now, agent.
Right? I'm still a free agent. Oh, Arizona Cardinals. We got another one down here.
I'm still a free agent. I was going to go Chiefs, here. But I was going to go Chiefs specifically from Patrick Mahomes, but that's a kind of a crappy reason to root for a team.
Go so Buffalo!
Yeah, Buffalo, maybe. I don't know. Just as long as it's not the Chicago Bears, the Denver Broncos, the Patriots, or the
don't say Cleveland, don't
or
say
the
Cleveland.
49ers. I would never be a Cleveland fan. I wouldn't be a Cleveland fan.
All right, Mason's not on the show anymore.
Not in the show. Yep. Okay. Yep.
This, bye.
See you later.
Yeah, retired. I couldn't be a Browns fan. I don't think so. That's because I talked so much smack about them when I was a Seahawks fan. That's really what it comes down to. Is because when I was really a football fan, they were the worst team by a long margin. They're the Buffalo Sabres, really, of the NFL at that time. So I talked too much smack. I can't really go back. I was banned from too many, you know, Browns groups. So
that heated right. Seahawks Browns rivalry to get you.
Totally. You know, well, hey, the one time that they played that I remember, it was field goals only. It was 6-3 the final, and the Browns won it. So I was pissed about it. But the most boring game in the history of football was the one that I happened to watch. So but I couldn't be a 49ers fan either. That's those are the four or five teams that I could not cheer for. So
just be glad, hey, you never give had me your convincing arguments.
DM me on Twitter or put a comment right here and convince me to be a fan of another team, you know, and maybe I'll do it. But free agent.
Tom got a nice care package. We'll have to get a nice care package for Mason. Yeah.
I'm jealous. Let's get all the NFL teams to send me a care package. Let's do that.
If we can get that to happen, that'd be pretty awesome. But speaking of football, it is Thursday night. We've got Tampa Bay and Philadelphia going at it right now. And it's all Tampa Bay right now. I mean, there's just no reason why it wouldn't be because, you know, Philadelphia is terrible and Tom Brady is on the Tampa Bay Bucks. So, yeah, it's 28-14. Yeah, 28-14 right now. Brady's got two touchdowns and an interception. Jalen Hurts actually has a touchdown and interception as well, only 109 yards passing. Scott and I both went with Tampa in this game. No surprise there. And it looks like we're going to start off the week doing very, very well. A lot of interesting games, a lot of good games this weekend. But the first game on our list is a terrible game. It's Miami at Jacksonville. We've gone with the Dolphins in that game. Green Bay, Chicago should be a lot of fun. I think Scott and I are both on the Packers bandwagon. We think that they can take down the Bears with ease. Cincinnati, Detroit, we've got the Bengals in that one. We've both got Indianapolis over Houston. We both have the Rams over the Giants. And then we have the Chiefs over the Washington football team. Now this is where things get a little bit interesting. Minnesota at Carolina. Scott's gone with Minnesota. I've gone with Carolina. Minnesota obviously coming off of the last-second field goal win against the Detroit Lions last week after the Lions went up by one on a two-point conversion. Carolina sitting at 3-2, still missing Christian McCaffrey. And Sam Darnold still looked pretty good. He's got some receivers to throw to. Why'd you go with Minnesota in this one, Scott?
I don't trust Carolina without Christian McCaffrey, and every time I pick them this year, they lose. So we're going the other way. We're going Minnesota.
In an effort to jinx is what's going on here, right? We're not picking it because this is who we think is going to win. It's because I just want him to win a damn game.
Yeah, pretty much.
Oh, boy. Yeah, see, I'm more along the lines that Minnesota just cannot seem to put a complete game together right now. I wouldn't be shocked if they won this game. It's definitely a coin toss, but I went with the Panthers in this one. Chargers at Ravens. So you went with the Chargers, and rightly so. I think they are a very, very good team, and I initially picked the Chargers. But then I got to thinking. I'm like, okay, this game's in Baltimore, so that means the Chargers are traveling from the West Coast to the East Coast. Obviously, the Chargers are coming off of a big victory against Cleveland last week. Baltimore also coming off of a big win last week against Indianapolis on Monday night, a big comeback win. And it got me thinking a little bit that this might be a trap game for the Chargers in a sense, because once again, they're traveling from the West to the East Coast. They're looking at a Baltimore team that, you know, didn't rush for 100 yards last week. It took a massive comeback late in the fourth quarter for them to win that game. And I feel like the Chargers might go in and undervalue the Baltimore Ravens with what they've got this year. So I'm going with my gut on this one. I'm taking taking a bit of a risk, and I'm going with the Ravens in this one, although I would not be shocked if the Chargers won.
Yeah, I went the other way. I went San Diego, and I went back and forth. You know, like you said, Baltimore had that huge win, but Baltimore's secondary is banged up. They're going to be missing a couple of their corners, and against that San Diego pass defense, that's going to be tough for them to overcome. San Diego, damn it. I want to call them the San Diego. I'm always going to call them the San Diego Chargers.
Dollar in the jar.
Yeah, I'm always going to call them the San Diego Chargers. Yeah, I think with Justin Herbert, with Baltimore down in the secondary, I think that's going to be too much to overcome.
And I don't think you're wrong in that assessment whatsoever. Arizona at Cleveland. This is another one that we disagree on. You've gone with the Browns. Obviously, I get it. You're a Browns fan. They're a good team. I'm going with Arizona because I think this is finally the moment where they actually get that signature win. This is the game that they have to win to prove to people that they are for real this year. And, you know, they're traveling to Cleveland, so it piles that on top of it as well. I look at Baker Mayfield, and I'm not super impressed with him this year. And I was watching a pregame show tonight, and they were talking about how he just is not as accurate down the field as he's been in years past. And you have to sit there and wonder. I know that one player doesn't necessarily make a huge difference, but you have to think that maybe missing Jarvis Landry has really kind of thrown everything out of whack for Baker Mayfield. You know, OBJ hasn't done a whole lot this year. He's coming back from injury, obviously. They've got a terrific running game. They've got a really good running game. But if you're not able to put that ball downfield accurately and consistently, it's going to change how defenses play against you. And I feel like if Cleveland's to win this game, Baker's going to have to dial it in and really hit a couple of those deep balls. And if he can do that, I think your pick is spot on. It's a home game. The Browns could win this game. But for right now, I'm sticking with Arizona because I feel like this is the moment where they're going to make that statement and go, boom, we're here.
All right, I'm gonna come back at your argument. Baker's got a partially separated shoulder. He first 2 weeks of the season, he had the best passer rating completion percentage in the league. Here at that shoulder, he had two bad weeks. Last week, he threw 4 incompletions. He had 2 touchdowns, no interceptions, and he threw for 322 yards. So he's feeling better. Here's bad news for you. DeAndre Hopkins is doubtful. Kyler Murray has a bad shoulder and is questionable for this game. So neither one of them may play for Arizona on Sunday.
Oh, they're coming back. It's a Willis Reed moment.
Okay. We'll see.
That's the thing, though. I mean, I'd have to look and see what, you know, yes, he threw for 322 yards last week, but what was the average passing yardage? I mean, was it, you know, was it dink and dunks? Was it a lot of deep balls? That's the thing I'd have to look at and see.
He's averaging about 9 yards of completion.
So, I mean, that's pretty good. Really good. So, I mean, if you're averaging almost a first down on passing plays, that's pretty damn good. So, yeah, I think it's going to be – I think that'll probably be the best game of Sunday if Murray and Hopkins are able to play. It probably will be the game of the week. We've got Vegas at Denver. You've gone with the Raiders. I've gone with the Broncos in this one. I can see why you went with the Raiders in a sense that maybe they're going to rise up and, you know, prove that John Gruden wasn't the reason for them winning. I just think with everything that's gone on around Vegas this week, I think they are probably due for a letdown. And that's the only reason I went with Denver this week. Not that I think Denver's any better than Vegas, but I feel like with everything that's kind of swirling around them right now, this might be one of those games where maybe not all the heads are together and Denver can take advantage.
Yeah, I kind of think it's the opposite. I think that was last week because I think the Raiders knew that what was coming. And so I think they're going to rebound this week, and I think they're going to play better. And I don't trust that Denver offense. You know, Teddy Bridgewater, he had a couple of good games the first couple of weeks, but he's been blah pretty much the last couple. And so I think the Raiders outscore him.
Can't complain there. It's going to be another one of those, you know, coin toss games. We both have Dallas over the Patriots. Good job. We both have Pittsburgh over the Seahawks. Good job. And then we've got Buffalo over Tennessee. You got Buffalo over Tennessee, correct?
Yes, I do.
So we both have the Bills over Tennessee at Tennessee. That should be a really fun Monday night game as well. So make sure you check back with us on Monday to find out how we did on all of our picks. Mason, what is your plan for Sunday? Are you going to be watching any football?
No, probably be slaving away once again. That's usually what I do on Sundays. I don't have much of a choice anymore. It's sad, I know, but and then the moment I get home from work, I still have like 20 videos I need to make. Yeah. So yay, having fun. But I'm just realizing I was shocked in the middle of that, because I just found out the Lightning beat the Red Wings 7-6 after OT. And it was 3-0 Detroit, I think, in the second period.
Yeah, so Tyler Bertuzzi had a hat trick, and I think he actually ended up scoring 4 goals in that game. Tyler Bertuzzi, 4 goals in that game. And to have that be a game that Tampa Bay ends up winning in overtime, when you have a guy that scores 4 goals and it's still not enough to beat Tampa Bay, yikes.
Austin Matthews!
What?
Austin Matthews in his first ever game.
Oh, I know. I remember that.
First ever game. And then the Kraken won their first NHL game in history over the Nashville Predators 4-3.
So,
and I wonder how many. Which Blues players scored? Which ones? That's all I care about now.
I don't know if any of them.
None
scored.
Of them. None of them. Huh. Yeah. Well, that's good.
No. No assist or anything in the game. Now, obviously, Vince Dunn and Jaden Schwartz both had points in their first game, the loss to Vegas. So that's good to see them successful. Although the game-winning goal was scored off of, can you guess?
A kick!
Can you guess who turned the puck over? I'll give you 3 choices. Who turned the puck over on one of Vegas' goals that we are very often saw here in St. Louis?
Vince Dunn, one of the 3.
Correct! On all 3, Vince Dunn with the giveaway on those. So, yeah, you're welcome, Seattle. Have fun with that. Well, guys, we've gone over an hour now. We had a lot to talk about. Mike Schilt's firing. Who could replace him? We previewed a bit of the NHL season, gave you our picks as far as division winners and the Stanley Cup champions. Talked NFL and gave you our picks for this week as well. Mason, thank you for joining us tonight. We're very much appreciative of that. Let people know where they can find you and what you got coming up.
I got more yelling coming up. Blues Fan Reacts on Twitter, obviously. Blues Fan Reacts on YouTube. I'm associated with Blues Buzz Blog and the Hockey Hound Show now. So I'll be doing weekly NHL recaps for Hockey Hound Show, obviously, and then an occasional article for Blues Buzz Blog. So I'm really looking forward to that. That's going to be a lot of fun. So lots of stuff going on.
Yeah, we all got to start getting paid for this stuff so we can do this fully and regularly instead of busting our asses and then getting here and going,
Manscaped sponsorship.
Been there, done that. all right, Scott, what do you got going on this week? I know you got a football game coming up tomorrow night like I do. Who are you covering tomorrow night, and what you got going on this weekend?
I will be at Zumwalt East tomorrow night, Washington Zumwalt East, so I'll be up in your neck of the woods tomorrow night for that game. That's pretty much all I got going on this weekend. The only other thing I have to ask people to do is please remember that we're still in October, Breast Cancer Awareness Month. Real Men Wear Pink campaign going on. You can log on. You can check out all of our social media pages to find the link. You can go to my page. You can go to the American Cancer Society page. Click the link to donate, but please help us. Any amount will help and help us fight breast cancer.
Most definitely. It's still plenty of time to donate and for a good cause as well. We have to make sure that we find a way to beat this in our lifetime. So make sure to get to our website and our Facebook page for the Real Men Wear Pink campaign and donate. I've got Lutheran North and Bishop Meege tomorrow night at Lutheran North. That should be a heck of a game for sure. A couple of Greenville College soccer games on Saturday night. So I'm definitely booked for the weekend and very much excited for Saturday night's game between the Blues and the Avalanche.
Oh, yeah.
That's a pretty interesting game.
Ain't nothing incoming, but it'll still be fun.
Yes, 8-0 Blues. That's why it'll be fun.
Okay.
See, you got to turn around and be positive. Brandon Saad, four goals in his return to Colorado.
Yes, because that's done Steve Dangle a lot of good this year.
Hey, I'm not as successful as Steve Dangle, so you know what?
Got it.
Maybe that's why it'll work.
Crystal.
All right. Well, for Blues Fan Reacts, for Scott, for Tom Franklin, Get well, man. Get well. I am the man called Wags, and we will see you guys next week. Have a great weekend, and have fun and be safe.
Hey, it's you, man, here from Casey. For all your sports news, catch the Toasted Tavern with Scott Tobin and the man called Wags weeknights at 9 p.m. You can follow Toasted Tavern on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube. Let's get toasted.